Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 333. That has a nice round number, doesn't it? 333 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. And today my guest is David Nagel. David is a business consultant outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, if I recall correctly, who doesn't focus exclusively on legal clients, but has a great many of them. And we spend a fair amount of time talking about how the legal realm of business fits in with the general overall schema of how business operates in this country and around the world. And we drill down a little bit on some of the unique perspectives that he has coming from a background, which is interesting. I mean, he will talk about being a high school dropout and a young father and going through some very, very difficult challenges and how that recognition, that need to address some problems in his life led him to a lifelong challenge of learning and developing his skills as a business consultant. So fascinating journey with a great story, and I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. So without any further delay, here is David Nagel. David Nagel, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, I'm delighted to have you with us today, David. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Be happy to. I'm a business consultant. I've owned my own company now for 23. This will be 24 years this year. I have a very interesting journey. I kind of started off as a high school dropout that got married very young and had two children and found out that I had no financial way to handle the responsibility that I was creating in my life. I kind of grew up on the streets of Chicago, and under the pressure and the responsibility of what I was creating, I realized I needed to change my direction, and I didn't know how to do that. I went bankrupt. They repossessed my car. We ended up having to leave our apartment in the middle of the night with our two kids because we couldn't afford the rent there. It was a pretty bad situation. And I was very much focused on how do I turn this around? I understood that I made a mistake and then I needed to turn it around. And what was really bizarre about it was that everything that I tried was not working. And I guess my main focus was that I thought I needed to go back to school and get some kind of an education there, but I didn't have the time or the money to be able to do it. And I mean, if that's way before the internet, right? So it was physically going to school. So one night I went to work. I was having the most terrible day. I worked nights. I was driving a forklift. I got in trouble twice before I even started work. And I had a breakdown. I had an emotional breakdown in the back of this trailer. And I was just crying. And I was like, God, please show me some direction to get out of here. I don't know what to do. I'm trying everything that I can. Nothing's working. And this voice in my head said, change your attitude. And I started exploring that idea. And I basically changed three things about my attitude. And it was act like I love what I do, do everything to the best of my ability, and treat everybody with total respect. Now, that's a longer story how I got to those three items, but that's what I got to. And in 30 days, my income tripled. And I was so astounded by the result that I got. Even though nobody around me related it to my attitude at all, they just said, you got very lucky and don't screw this up like you've screwed everything else up.
Yeah.
I knew that there was something to what I had done. And I decided that I was going to figure out how that happened. So I began to go to libraries and get books I was getting books on cassette tape. I was getting lectures on cassette tape. I was diving into everything I could figure out to try to learn what I was doing. And I basically went through a period of about 7 years of study. And during that period of time, I went from a truck driver at a company to upper management in charge of expanding the company across the country with no formal education whatsoever. So I knew that what I was doing was working. I was giving other businesses advice as I was doing my thing, and they were having massive success in a very short period of time. And I was like, I want to do this on my own. I want to be a consultant. And I also want to primarily deal with the mindset that people deal with when they go into business, because they have a horrific mindset that doesn't allow them to move forward. So in 1999, I started my business and never looked back. And it has been just a hell of a ride. It's been amazing. We work with people all over the world in building their businesses and setting them free to accomplish their goals and their dreams.
Well, it's a fascinating story. I'm struck by a couple of things. I had the listeners here know, law is my fourth career. I got started late in life, but way back in the beginning, I cooked for a living. Oh, wow. In restaurants. And I remember I had a head chef, cook, whatever, say to me one time that his philosophy of life was change of face, change of pace. And I thought, what do you mean? What does that mean? And he said, you know what? You just smile. You go through life, you smile at people, you'd be surprised at how that changes the pace of your life. I thought, that's kind of interesting. He says, and then it works the other way. Change of pace creates a change in pace. When you start doing more and more and achieving more, you're going to be happier, and it's going to be reflected on your face. And I've thought about that damn near 50 years. And it sounds not dissimilar from your revelation of change your attitude.
That's exactly what it sounds like. And I'm assuming the results were phenomenal for you also.
Well, I was never really had a lot of difficulty in that respect. I was a fun party guy in the restaurant. If you read Bourdain's book, I cooked in the 70s in restaurants, and that was very his experience was, he was much better at it than me, but his party experience and social experience was very similar to mine. So I had a great time cooking. I loved cooking for a living. But I remember that head chef telling me that. And, it's funny, is you don't remember things like that often. And it's something that has stuck with me, like I said, for damn near 50 years now. I'm also struck by the fact that you made your way to the library. And isn't it true that our kids today, well, they can't think past the internet, but anything right. You ever wanted to learn in any subject to any degree was always available to you in the library.
True. Very true. Not only is it only available, I never considered looking any other place. I mean, I don't know where I would have looked.
Right. In those days, right.
Yeah, I need to find out what I did. So I went there. I didn't even know what subject to look up, right? I just started picking up books, either biographies. I went through the whole thing of reading different religious texts. Eventually, I worked my way around and found like Anthony Robbins, that type of thing. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely directly for the library. That's exactly where I headed.
I still find it interesting that so many people have some resistance to the concept of being self-taught or understanding the ability that they have to learn new things simply from reading. It still has, I think, in some circles, has a kind of a negative connotation. Oh, all they ever do is read, or as if that's somehow something to be ashamed of. I don't really get it.
Yeah, I don't know that I get it either. I do know one thing that's a very interesting concept was basically the way that we were taught to learn has major issues with it.
For sure.
People will read a book and they'll be like, well, I read that book. I don't get any results whatsoever. And they think that because they intellectually understand a concept that they're going to get a different result in their life. They don't know anything about changing a paradigm or working with your subconscious mind or changing habits or understanding different value hierarchies or you know, different things that actually make a difference. It's not just reading a book and everything changes.
Right. You have to be able to implement it. You have to be able to take that next level of understanding. You mentioned Tony Robbins. I remember when I read his book, Awake the Giant Within.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was, first one. I remember reading it the first time and thinking, well, that was kind of interesting. I enjoyed that. And sitting back, as you said, waiting for success to watch over me because I've finished reading this 400-page book, whatever it was.
Yes.
It wasn't until I realized, you know what, I better go back and reread that and actually kind of take it apart and take some concepts away from it and figure out how I can implement those in my life. And it wasn't until I did that I started getting some progress in that area. So, I mean, your point is well made.
Yeah, it's interesting because nobody ever taught me to take this knowledge and learn how to apply it, because it was always about just trying to remember it so that you could take a test and pass it in school, right?
Yeah.
So you really didn't learn anything. You just memorized a bunch of information.
Well, and I see this frequently with attorneys in the legal space who we now have. I mean, when I first entered the legal world, when I graduated at a very old age, the only book that was available on how to start a law practice was Jay Funberg's book. And now there's a slew of them. I mean, you know, 30, 40, 50, 100. I don't know how many books there are about starting a law firm or improving a law firm, building a law firm. And still, I think we miss that critical step. We read the books and say, okay, somehow that's going to influence how I run my practice. But unless you take concrete, actionable steps to implement something in what you've read or what you've seen or what you've heard, whether it be a podcast or a YouTube video, and until you take that next actionable step, you're not going to have progress.
Right.
No? Tell me a little bit then about how you became, I know a lot of your client base or a lot of your business now is focused around the legal space. How did that come to be?
That's a good question. I had probably about 12 years ago, there was a gentleman that came to me that was an attorney who basically lost everything. And it was a series of problems. It wasn't just one. One of the problems was that his wife was very ill for a year and ended up having to kind of put his practice down and take care of her. But he also really didn't have the knowledge to build anything for himself. And what he realized was that he did not know how to build a business. So he had to start over from nothing. Like, he literally gave me his last dime to work with me to help him build a business, to show him how to build a business. And when he came to me, he said, listen, he said, I've got an idea for a business. He said, tell me what you think about it, because he said, I'm really not sure. I've never done anything like this before. He said, but the crux of the idea is based on this information, that you have attorneys come out of school, they get a great education, they pass their bar, they're ready to go, but they don't know anything about business. And unless they're going to go work for another firm, they're in real trouble, because now they're basically trying to learn two very complicated things at the same time. And it's one of the reasons why many people don't make it. Now, at that point in time, I did not realize that attorneys knew nothing about business when they came out. And as he was explaining it to me, I'm like, well, if what you're telling me is accurate, I mean, it sounds like you've got a fantastic business opportunity in front of you. So I started working with him, and basically I was teaching him not only how to build his business, but how to communicate with these attorneys, because I even found out that communicating with them from the perspective of, hey, listen, we've got something that'll help you be more successful, was a challenge in and of itself. And it was a major challenge. Like, it was not easy to convince these people that they needed another education in order to learn how to build the foundation of the business that they needed in order to practice law the way that they wanted to do so. And it almost was as if by telling them that, in their mind, they were internalizing it as that they were stupid or something. A business should be something that they know how to do, and it should not be any big deal to be able to do this. Like, you know, any idiot could figure out how to do a business. So we had to learn how to communicate with them in a way where they felt like they were making an intelligent decision to learn the information themselves. And then I just kind of sat back as he did this, and I was coaching and consulting what he was doing, but I was getting the benefit of watching all these businesses begin to change. And then there were things that he couldn't do. And he would say, go talk to David and his company, and they'll help you with those things. And it actually started off in a way where we had these attorneys coming that were really looking mostly for mindset information. Because here's the problem. It was, how did they grow up? What was the value system that they learned as they were growing up when they were children? Were their parents middle class, working class? Did they have professional parents? Very few of them actually had parents that were entrepreneurs or business owners. And most people don't realize that if you grow up middle class, the value system in which you make decisions from is vastly different than if you grow up with parents that own their own business. And they literally conflict with each other. You know, one is about growth and learning and profit, and the other one is about staying safe and being loyal and not taking too much risk. And if you don't learn how to make decisions from a different place, you end up in real trouble. So that's how I ended up working with a lot of attorneys for the last 12 years.
One of the questions that I frequently ask our guests when they're of the type that they're a solo or small firm practitioner and we're doing a lessons learned type show, we frequently trace their journey, you know, from undergrad school through law school and into the practice. And I frequently ask, did you always see yourself as an entrepreneur, or were there entrepreneurs in your family, or did you grow up with businesses being created around you? And to your point, a small set of them said, sure, you know, my parents built their own business, or my father was an attorney or something like that. But the vast majority of them were, no, I had no idea about running a business or starting an entity. I had to learn that once I got out of law school. And we have this conversation not too long ago. I think there are three things that you need to know to start your own practice. And, you know, law school handles one of them, and that is teaches you how to think like a lawyer and how to look at a problem from a lawyerly perspective, and gives us a broad brush understanding of the concept of the law behind the problems you're addressing. If the law schools do that, and probably do that, well, I'm going to say well enough. The second part of that is you need to learn how the court system works if you're working in the court, or the transactional system works if you're working in a transactional environment. You need to know the nature of the business that you're working in. So if that means I need to learn how to write a complaint, or I need to learn how to file a lawsuit, or I need to know how to register a corporation, those kinds of things. That's the second part. And then the third part is, as you've said, how do you build a business? How do you go about building this? Because one's business administration, one is the application of your practice, and the third is the law. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's an opportunity there that goes unsatisfied by most law schools. So tell me, when you do have a client come to you and say, David, you know, I got an okay practice. I'm, you know, it's not knocking it out of the park. I'm not starving, but it just can't seem to get over the hump. How do you approach that with a client? What's kind of your methodology without giving away, you know, the secrets of the store? I mean, what do you do with a client in order to get them to move to that next level?
Well, one of the first things that we do is we ask them, what is their vision for their business? Mm-hmm. And actually, it's a major question because many of them don't have one, right? The idea is they just want to be profitable and do the work that they do. So we ask them what their vision is. And if they don't have one, we show them how to create one. And that vision includes how much money do they want to make? Where do they see themselves within their own firm? What do they love to do the most as from a business perspective in their own firm? And where do they ultimately want to go with this? So we get them very clear on those things, because that then determines where we're focused on what problems are we actually solving within the business itself. Where are they stuck? What blind spots do they have? In other words, things that are causing major issues or preventing them from moving forward that they just don't see because of a lack of understanding around concepts or ideas, or you know, just the intellectual understanding of the way certain problems work that are different from their own history in life. And then what we do is we begin to go through a process of basically teaching them what needs to change from the way that they think about the things that they're doing, and then practically, how do they actually change it? What are the strategies? What are the techniques? All the way into team building, hiring, managing people, you know, everything that's not law, we really show them how to do.
If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time, because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I have been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimler at netprofit.com. Are you struggling to get more clients for your law firm? Are you overwhelmed and feel burnt out from working too much? Sam Malai is a lawyer on a mission to liberate stressed out lawyers. As a legal disruptor, Sam Malai pioneered the virtual law firm model, building 3 multi-million dollar law firms in just under 5 years. As a lawyer, he has generated over 16,000 clients online and gathered over 3,000 5-star Google reviews. I'm going to go off script here just a little bit. I've known Sam for a long time. I am a client of his, a student of his. I took his course a long time ago, and I can tell you it's one of the best courses that I've ever taken. It was so chock full of useful information, hands-on instruction, no fluff, no waste of time. It was down and dirty, and I think it was one of the best courses that I've ever taken. And on top of that, Sam gives so freely of his time and his knowledge, both outside of the course and long after you're done. So, you know, I can't say enough about Sam personally, nor his courses. And as you're going to hear now, his book that he's written. So take that for what it's worth. Sam helps thousands of lawyers around the world create their own profitable law firms so they can work smarter and work less in his online implementation program called Legal Funnel. Over 4,000 Legal Funnel lawyers have applied this system to all types of practice areas, from transactional to litigation. Sam's new number one Amazon best-selling book, Virtual Law Firm Secrets, How to Run Your Law Firm So It Doesn't Run You, gives you the exact blueprint for liberating yourself from the traditional law firm practice to give you back your most important asset, your time. For a limited time, get a free copy. Listen to that. Get a free copy of Virtual Law Firm Secrets at legalfunnel.com/book. Again, get your free book at legalfunnel.com/book. I want to tug at one of those concepts a little bit here, because I think it's a question that isn't asked enough. And you articulated it beautifully, but I want to give it a little more emphasis. You said you frequently ask them, where do they see themselves within their own organization? I think that's an important question that isn't asked often enough. But people say, well, where do you see your organization going? What is it that you like to do? But frequently, the question, where do you see yourself within your business, is something that goes unaddressed. Tell me how you kind of, you know, drill down on that question.
So the business itself is an entity. Business is a way of distributing a product or a service to the masses in an exchange for a profit. That's the idea behind it.
Sure.
So it has many parts. And most of the people that we run into, they're in love with law, right? They love the idea of law, or how they practice, or the specific niche in where they practice law, that type of thing. And they never really thought much about the idea of being a business owner, or somebody who's running a business or managing it, or running a team, or coming up with systems and ideas so that they can scale, that type of process. So when we ask them that question, where do they see themselves? Sometimes they know, because they've been in it long enough to know that what a business actually begins to look like, and they've had some time to think about it. And sometimes they don't, because they just don't have enough information. So we'll then talk to them like I'm talking to you. Like, here's all these different pieces of this business. Do you primarily see yourself as the product, which is the attorney, right? Like law, the degree that they get, that's their product for business. Do they see themselves being the product, right? Is that the piece that they want? Would they like to have a CEO, a COO, a CFO running everything and they're just the product? Or do they want to be part of that process themselves? So, because now that tells me, what kind of an education does this person need in order to be as proficient as they are in the law product, in as far as the business of running the business? The other thing is this: one of the things that's pretty cool is that attorneys very often become very good at strategy thinking, which really helps in business if they can get it to cross over in their mind as far as what they're doing. So it's almost as if something in life has prepped them in this way to think in a certain way. That helps them whether they want to get in there and get in the nuts and bolts of building the business themselves, or is it the kind of business where they need to go out and source people that have really solid business experience, probably in law, so that the people that they're bringing on understand law itself, and then they put those people in charge of what it is that they want to do. So that's the crux of finding out, where do you see yourself in this organization that you want to build? You can have a great dream. You can have a great, great big dream for what it is that you want to create. And because you're the one that owns it, you could see yourself anywhere in there that you want, and we can show you how to build it any way that you want.
I think it's really important. The observation I would make from the discussions I've had with all the many guests that we've had on the program is, I generally think when you ask that question, when you drill down, people are going to land in one of three areas.
Okay.
The first is, you know what? I want to do the law part. That's what energizes me. That's what I think I'm good at. It's what I went to school for. I want to try cases, or I want to work with a client. I need somebody to take care of everything else. I need them to bring me the clients and run the business and pay the staff. I just want to do the law. And that's the kind of business that I want to create. So that's one scenario. Second scenario is, I want to run the business. I want my hands on all the systems that are being run. I don't necessarily have to do the law. I can hire attorneys smarter attorneys than me to actually deliver the product. But I want to run the business, do the staffing and what have you. That's the second part. And then the third category, the third area that I think people often land in is I hear them say, I want to be the rainmaker. I want to be the person who brings the business in. I'm going to have people to run the business. I'm going to have people to do the work, but I'm the rainmaker. I'm the marketer. I make it happen. Does that kind of fit with what your experiences have been?
Absolutely. 100%. That you've nailed it. That's it.
Yeah. And this is why I think it's refreshing to hear you kind of come at it from that perspective, because I think oftentimes business coaches or, you know, legal coaches, they have a kind of a, I think this is the right way to do it. This is the way we've done it in the past. This is the way we've been most successful. Like to steer you towards that. And not everybody can do, you know, fit in that form.
That's right.
I think you have to be, if you're a consultant, if you're a business guy who's helping others build their business, you have to recognize all those three distinct roles. And when you do that, what you offer your client is going to be different.
I think one of the most mature, courageous things any person in business can do is to admit where they're not good and where they have no interest in becoming good. And that learning how to find somebody that is way better than they are to do that specific piece. Because it's also one of the places where you see people stuck the most. You know, there's this thing, this idea in, especially in American life, in American historically in business, that you have to do everything yourself. And it's, you know, I don't know how that necessarily came about.
Yeah, I think
it's a ridiculous idea.
I think it's that work ethic, that concept that says, in order to get ahead, you've got to work harder than the next guy. You have nobody to look to but yourself. And that has some value, but it gets twisted around, doesn't it?
Very much.
To where people say, I got to do everything and I can't trust anybody to do anything else and nobody can do it as good as me. And pretty soon they're having a physical mental breakdown.
Yeah, that's a very archaic mindset. It really is.
I tell you, one of the most refreshing responses to that question I had, I was talking, I can't remember who it was, but where was I? And it doesn't matter. A younger individual, and I asked them what their vision going forward, and what role they saw themselves playing. And they said, well, I'll tell you what, I don't really want to work hard. So that's my driving vision. I want to build something to the point where I don't have to work that much. And I thought, well, that's really honest. And I can understand that viewpoint. Now, you're not going to go from here to there overnight. So there's going to be a lot of hard work in between. But if that's your objective, you want to get to a point where you own a business in which you don't have to spend a lot of time running it, that can be done.
100%. An interesting person, obviously he's not a law individual, but Richard Branson.
Sure.
I often recommend that our clients read Branson's books because he has an amazing outlook on the way he sees his life. And if you were to ask him the question of where do you see yourself in your business, he's just the person that comes up with the idea. He literally will go out and find the talent to start the business. He'll find the CEO and he'll say, I want you to tell me what your vision is for my business. Here's what I'd like to create. You come up with a vision to create it. And then Branson will go do all the things that he's good at, like create the funding, you know, find talented individuals or whatever. But you're not going to see him in the day-to-day managing anything.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So tell me a little bit then about what are some of the products that you work through or some of the things that are generated by the consultancy that attorneys latch on to and find valuable?
Well, one of the things that we get the most pushback around that has the biggest amount of scale is letting go of control. And it seems like it's a major issue for attorneys, right? Yeah. And listen, control is a very interesting thing. You know, we'll say listen, you're really a control freak. And this is good and it's bad. Sure. It's good because it allows you to pay attention to all the details that you need to do to be genius in your work. But it also holds you back because you don't think anybody else can do anything as good as you. And it's not true. It's absolutely not true. So the idea is this person needs to learn some things about business that are absolutes. First of all, when a person enters into business, one of the ideas behind it is that they want to be successful. Well, anytime a person is going to be more successful than they can be just like if you were even with a solopreneur needs help to some degree. To be successful beyond your own physical presence and what you can do, a person has to understand the art of leverage. They have to understand how to leverage time, money, people, and knowledge, because all success is built on understanding how to leverage those four things. And it does take a little bit of time to be able to learn that. And in order to learn that, they also have to learn how to delegate, how to take an idea, concept, or a result that they want to achieve in their mind, and then communicate that to somebody who has the skill to pull it off within the realm of their business. So where we run up against the biggest roadblock is the illusion that people have in their mind that they think they're the only one that can do it, that they have to have a tight control on that area of their business. And when they break through that, that's where we see like probably the best success, because they're able to begin to understand scale at that point.
One of the ways I think that manifests itself most clearly to me as of late is, you know, during COVID, when we all by necessity had to become more virtual, run our offices in a virtual environment. And one of the things I kept hearing from attorneys was their concern about whether or not they could maintain control of their staff and ensure that, you know, they were actually working. Uh-huh. You know, and the thought was, well, if they're in the office, I can walk down the hallway and exert my control that way, and I can peek in, and I can see that they're working on the things that I want them to be working on. But if they're at home, I can't do that. And I was thinking, wow, if that's the level of control that you need to run your business, you have a bigger problem than your business itself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? I mean, let's think about that for a second. What must they believe about their employees?
Yeah. What message are they giving?
Yeah.
Because you know they're not keeping it under wraps. If you have that thought sufficient enough that you mentioned it, you know, in public, you're also, or in private, you're also clearly communicating that in public, and your employees are going to understand that. They're going to recognize that this guy doesn't trust me, and he thinks I'm ripping him off or her off. You know,
well, I mean, there's the idea that
they don't value me.
Exactly. They don't think that people actually want to work, right?
Yeah, I never understand that. Yeah.
But it also affects the way that they hire.
Sure.
Because what are they subconsciously looking for in a person? Are they looking for a person that can actually think on their feet, make decisions, take responsibility and control of their position? Or are they looking for somebody that'll just obey their dictate of what it is that they need to do and, you know, follow along like they're on a leash?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I don't mean to disparage big law, because there's a lot of great big law firms that are fabulous to work for. But I think there's a little bit of the big law mentality where we have, you know, senior partners and the partners and the associates and, you know, the idea of keeping a close eye on your associate and your intern, making sure that they're chugging out as many billable hours as possible. I think a lot of it stems from that. And we're having some difficulty thinking past that. Now, the irony is that COVID forced that on so many firms. And it seems to be taking, I don't think we're going back. I've said this before. We're not going back to 100% brick and mortar law offices anymore. Virtualism is a necessary component of the future law firm. But attorneys have to get on board with what that means in terms of managing their staff and running their practice.
Sure. Yeah, I agree.
So how do you know when the time has come where you can say to your client, you know, I think you're there. I think you've reached that level of success that we talked about. I don't think you need my help anymore. Does that point something that comes up? Is that a reality or is there always something?
Oh, sure. No, it's absolutely a reality. So the idea is we usually work with people. I mean, our average, just as an average, we usually work with people around a period of 3 years.
Okay. So
the first year is learning, understanding what has to be done, and they begin to start to implement. The second year is they're kind of getting their feet. The third year is mastery of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. In other words, they can think about a problem the same way that we would think about it. And when they demonstrate that, as soon as they start demonstrating that, that they can really think through this on their own, they really understand everything that we taught them, then we're like, you're golden. Go do your thing. You don't need us anymore. Unless a person wants to participate. Like we do something that's called the Elite Mind 365 Day a Year program, where I meet with our upper end clients for about 10 to 15 minutes every morning, every day, 7 days a week.
Oh, wow.
Including holidays and all of that. So they get to network. They also get elite mindset ideas, new stuff that I'm learning we bring to the table, which is really, it's really cool for them. But it's usually about 3 years. And within that period of time, they learn a tremendous amount. They've usually scaled many multiple times than where they were because we understand how to make a business move really quick. And when they feel, you know, as soon as they feel confident in being able to make those decisions, and we're always here if they need us, right? If they run into something that they can't figure out, they can just send us an email and we'll help them.
Well, let me finish up here, David, with this one existential question.
Okay.
Do you feel that running a law practice has something that is unique in and of itself, as opposed to running, you know, another type of business that deals with professional services or knowledge? Is there anything unique about the law practice?
There is. And that's the laws of being an attorney in and of itself. The rules of bar, right?
Sometimes the restrictions that the bar impose. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And yeah, that's where you've got to get very creative in getting around those so that a person, I mean, I think a lot of those laws are actually a bit archaic, to be honest.
For sure.
But it, regardless, if that's the
playing field, you got to.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah. You got to deal with it.
Right. So, right.
All right, David, tell our audience, what's the best way for them to reach out to you if they want to follow up with anything you've had to offer today or just touch base?
Okay. So our website is davidnagle.com. Last name is N as in Nancy, E-A-G-L-E. Or you can go to the Successful Mind podcast, where we do podcasts, multiple podcasts every week about success, mindset, and all kinds of cool things. And it's on every podcast channel that's out there. Yep. We're like top five in business podcasts.
Yeah, I forgot to mention, my apologies about the podcast. I've listened to a couple episodes. They're really spot on. And I like listening to podcasts that are related to business, but not necessarily to law. So I got a lot of value out of that. I encourage our listeners to go and search for that. We'll have all that information in our show notes. And I wanted, again, thank you, David, for taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil. It's been a real privilege. Thank you.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode. Our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO. As I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just
what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.